what's your podcast about? And I don't even know how to answer that question. It's about conversations. It's about speaking with people and having dialogue about, you know, things that are going on around us, things that we see in society, and just having our opinion on those things and meeting different people in order and speaking with them, getting to know them, getting to see how different individuals think, how different individuals see life, you know. That's what the podcast is really about, and that's what you tuned in, hosted by the one and only Uncle Kevin.
Yo, what up, guys? How you doing? Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we'll be talking business with Uncle Kev. In this podcast, what we mainly do is look at business strategies, which topics are making headlines in the business world. And yeah, so if you're first time around here, smash that subscribe button. Without further ado, today we'll be looking at one of the biggest social media companies that we have around, which is TikTok. TikTok is gearing up for games, including interactive mini games for TikTok Live. TikTok is already one of the world's fastest growing social media platforms, where it's even overtaken YouTube on watch time in select markets and sports over 1 billion monthly active users. Now the company is looking to expand the range of activities its users can do when they are tired flipping through short videos. A report from Reuters today indicates that the company is further investing in HTML5 games and has already begun tests. But we understand there may be more to TikTok's gaming strategy than web-based gaming. It appears TikTok is also working on a live mobile gaming feature that would allow creators to better engage fans whilst live streaming. You know, it's fascinating when you look at the rise of TikTok over the past few years. These guys are phenomenal at running their business, because I remember at one point when TikTok was just Musical.ly, and the way it grew and the way they took advantage of the pandemic is phenomenal. You know, it just goes to show what capital, infrastructure, great idea, amazing team can do for a business. In this case, how TikTok, you know, I remember it was there in 2019, but until 2020, I knew I was on Musical.ly, but I had never used the app. And then TikTok, I don't think I was even on TikTok when the pandemic started, but it became a popular app on other platforms that people would be talking about it. And then you end up downloading it just to see what are people doing. But the amazing thing about them is how they used the momentum that they had to develop the business and to grow it into the business that it is today, to be competing with YouTube on watch time and even beating YouTube on watch time. Like, YouTube is the biggest platform for creators and for people who make video. And, you know, TikTok gave them a run of their money with short form videos, but then TikTok changed their strategy. You know, their entry into the market was they were using short form videos, and then they went into long form videos. And now with gaming, when they started introduce gaming, it's just about to level up for them, you know, because now they're not only competing with YouTube, but they're now starting to look at companies like Twitch, which will be phenomenal if they can bring that whole Twitch base. And if TikTok ends up having the features that you need from all these platforms, and they can offer all those features on their platform, the only thing that will be left is monetization for creators. And then boom, it's a whole different ball game. The social video app's move into HTML5 game was already known, as TikTok had previously announced this plan alongside its Zynga partnership last year. The two companies had teamed up to launch the HTML5 game Disco Loco 3D exclusive on TikTok. And at the time, TikTok confirmed it was already in discussion with other game makers for similar deals, telegraphing a larger gaming expansion was still to come. TikTok says it doesn't have any new partners to name on its front now. Yeah, man, I can't wait to see how big they can go and what other different moves they'll make. Because with the social media space, right, it's like it's a new business model whereby everybody's trying to figure out, even the big guys, they're all trying to figure out, how do we make money? How can we make more money? Because with new features, it's like you're creating a new business, and then you have to figure out who. Because in the beginning, the model was you sell the data that you have. So if you have a billion people, you're able to sell all that data to marketers, to people like that. But then what starts to happen is you find it's not a sustainable model, because a lot of times when businesses start struggling, what they do is they cut off their marketing budget. So if they start cutting off the marketing budget, that means you cannot really rely on ads. You cannot rely on ads for revenue. But ads can be a stream of revenue that is very necessary, and hence data is important. The other thing that you can move on to is offering your users more services that they can pay for. You know, with gaming, you can offer a game and then put in perks within those games. So like buy a t-shirt, buy this for your character. And then that's another way of starting to create revenue for game developers and also for TikTok. So this move is a big move for a company with a billion active users. Imagine if out of a billion, 500 million spend 50 cents a day. And that's just a day. How much money they'll be looking to get. So TikTok is a very interesting company that we should all keep an eye on, especially in the coming months and years, because what's going to happen and that with other social media platforms starting to copy what they do, Instagram with Reels, Facebook, I think it's still called Reels, YouTube Shorts, you know, when the companies start to do that, in a way, they were trying to combat TikTok. But the one thing about these TikTok folks is they are very smart and they keep on moving and they keep on creating different strategies that are amazing to watch. Our next topic that we have to move on to, Elon Musk, SpaceX could become the most valuable startup in the U.S. following news of its $125 billion valuation. Listen, man, the man is already rich off of Twitter. And now we're about to get into SpaceX, man. Like, they're about to put SpaceX public. And that could be crazy. That would be crazy. Like, if, let's see how, what his net worth is today. Elon Musk net worth. All right. So his net worth as of today, according to Google, is $218 billion. So if he owns, say, 50% of that $125 billion, dollars on SpaceX, because it's private right now, man, the rich get richer, fam. The rich get richer. SpaceX could turn out to be the most valuable startup business in the U.S., readers reported. Elon Musk's company could overtake Stripe, which is currently the most valuable startup per report. It comes after reports say SpaceX planned to sell shares at $70, valuing it at $125 billion. SpaceX, Elon Musk's rocket manufacturer, could become the most valuable startup. Okay. You know, I don't like how news, they repeat the same thing you just read before. With overall valuation jumping to $125 between October and May, SpaceX will become the most valuable startup. So this told Reuters was valued at $125 billion. The aerospace company founded in 2002 would leapfrog payments. Despite this jump in valuation, SpaceX could remain behind TikTok parent company ByteDance, the world's most valuable startup, which is worth $140 billion. According to data from CB Insights. Wow. One source who requested remain anonymous told that SpaceX hasn't issued any shares in the secondary offering, but could do so later this year. Musk owned nearly 44% of SpaceX as of August 2021, according to federal communications filing by the tech blog SpaceX didn't meet. Yeah, so it's phenomenal what's about to happen. If they're about to go public, this, I believe, will be his second company, because Tesla is public, and then this will be the second company that he has that's going public. So that means they're ramping up investments into going to Mars and stuff like that. It's phenomenal, man. The way, and if people are obsessed with this company like they did with Twitter, like they did with Tesla, I can only imagine, like, it'll be $70 in the beginning, and there'll be a lot of hype on the stock when it comes in. That you might see it also trade up to the $700. But the thing is, we people have a lot of money in the bank last year due to the pandemic. So I don't really know if that's what will happen. But you can see there's a future there. And I don't know if $70 for SpaceX is a lot, especially for a business that doesn't offer, you know, commodities that you can buy straight out of a supermarket. Like, they don't offer services, and what they offer, I get, is important for international space travel. But the challenge with that is, how do you value that for that as yourself, and how would you make your decision to invest in it rather than just jumping onto the hype train? Because I don't know, if you understand the business, then get into it. For me, I don't really understand how SpaceX makes money. You know, who are they offering their services to? Is their biggest client the government? And then what does that mean in the long run? You know, is there competition and stuff like that. So you have to be very careful when it comes out if how you would invest in it. It's a good opportunity to make money because obviously if you're a speculator, you know that people will be obsessed with anything that's owned by Elon. So the price is about to go up as well. $70 might be low. But that's at $125 billion. So it's how much do you at what valuation do you see the business being worth? Do you see SpaceX reaching $200 in 2 years, in a year's time? At what point does it double its value? It's very possible with the different moves that they make. But the ultimate question is, how does SpaceX make money? That, for me, once it's answered, then we can start looking into investing in it. Tesla, for me, I feel like at this point in time, it's overvalued for a company that if you want to buy a Tesla today, it might take 6 months before it's delivered. So I don't really believe in the valuation that it has. I feel it's overvalued. It's a bubble price that will break down at some point. The market always corrects itself. So, and we see that a lot of times with speculations and stuff like that. But we live in a time where a lot of money has been printed and people have money. So people have been spending money into the stock market. Our next topic of the day is Canada to ban China's Huawei and ZTE from its 5G networks. Canada says it will ban two of China's biggest telecoms equipment makers from working on its 5G 4 networks. The restrictions against Huawei and ZTE were announced by the country's industry minister on Thursday. Man, this man has a beautiful name. Francois Philippe Champagne says, the move will improve Canada's mobile internet service and protect the safety and security of Canadians. But Huawei Canada said it was disappointed by the decision, which it said was political. This is an unfortunate political decision that has nothing to do with cybersecurity or any of the technologies in question, a statement said. Several nations, including UK, USA, and New Zealand, have already put restrictions on the firms. You know, that's the sad part. We live in one of the best times economically ever because the world has become a global village and our connection is like that. But we also live in a reality where we have geopolitical concerns with things that happen. You know, there are always political situations and politics affects business and politics affects economics. And you always have to be very careful how you move and navigate the world, especially for countries. And when you look at how we've become super reliant on telecommunication, how communication is vital, especially for data movement and data progress. And there's a lot of things that happen that to the layman, we don't really understand what goes on, especially with these networks, how our data moves and how our data is tracked and how that data can be used to do harm or to not to serve and protect, right? So for countries, for politicians, what they have to look at is when you're looking at Chinese companies where a lot of times there's a little bit of influence from the governments. It's how much do you want them to integrate into your country's infrastructure and have access to that information? So whilst Huawei Canada might be working, you know, judiciously based off of their fiduciary duty to make money for their shareholders, it's also that, you know, we don't really want the Chinese government having access to our information. We don't really want this. So those decisions then tend to, the political decision becomes a business decision. And in which, you know, in as much as there's a lot of benefit of having Huawei and ZTE in Canada, employing people, creating opportunities and creating, you know, bringing software and technology that the country needs to keep moving forward, there's also need to be very wary of, you know, things happening, because you never want a security breach where then you go, oh, you know, we could have done something and we didn't do anything. So it's a very tricky subject where you have to look at it from both sides and be like, oh yeah, I can see why the Canadians made this move. I can also understand why Huawei is like, yo, we're just trying to make money, you know. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Canada's announcement was hardly expected, as its allies had already barred Huawei and ZTE from their own high-speed networks. Speaking to reporters in the Canadian capital of Ottawa, Mr. Champagne said, the decision came after a full review by our security agents and consultations with our closest allies. Let me be very clear, we will always protect the safety and security of Canadians and will take any actions necessary to safeguard our telecommunication infrastructure. In a 5G world, at a time where we rely more and more on our daily lives on our network, this is the right decision. A spokesperson for the Chinese embassy in Ottawa told Reuters News agency that Beijing sees the security concern raised by Canada as a pretext for political manipulation. Ain't this funny, though? Like, that's how it ends up being for China, because they have to put it that way, you know, because they're losing out on revenue. And it's their businesses that are being affected, but they're also ignoring that these people are, there's a real concern, you know, it's a real concern. It's like saying to a bully, listen, man, I'm putting these rules in place so that you don't touch me. These are my boundaries. And then they're like, nah, man, you know what? Your boundaries, you're hiding something. You're not saying the truth, you know. Well, Canada said its equipment had been closely scrutinized by the government and security agency, that there had been zero security incidents caused by Huawei equipment. Banning of Huawei equipment and services will lead to significant economic loss in Canada and drive up the cost of communications for Canadian customers, the statement said. Unfortunately, this decision is beyond our control as a business. However, we will do everything in our capacity to protect the legitimate rights and interests of our customers, partners, and ourselves. Meanwhile, ZTE said it rejected the premise of the Canadian government announcement, saying it was highly speculative. We have always abided by international standards and best practices, opening up our cybersecurity labs to enable regulators and stakeholders to verify the security of ZTE products. Yeah, but the question is, you know, what happens to the data? You know, you have access to a country's data, and your technology can be used to send that data to your home-based country. That's the point that they're afraid of. So, you know, in as much as you say, yeah, we understand, you have, you know, globally, ZTE and Huawei, I know in Africa, have probably taken over, but these people have options, and they cannot, they will say, you know, there's no other reason that they don't want to deal with you. It's just because the security threat is you, you know, it's the elephant in the room, you know. 5G or fifth generation is the next upgrade to mobile internet networks, offering much faster data download and upload speed. It also allows more devices to simultaneously access the internet. It comes as data usage is soaring as the popularity of video and music streaming grows. This is pushing governments and mobile phone network operators to improve their telecommunication infrastructures. Companies that have already installed the equipment made by Chinese manufacturers must now remove it. Whoa. Man, this one, that's okay. This one might be a problem because, you know, when companies are building this infrastructure, the sourcing process, the whole shebang that you have to go through to make this, and then to all of a sudden be told, yeah, you gotta take it off and look for other manufacturers to give you the said products, yeah, this is going to be expensive for most companies. Some of China's biggest technology and telecom firms have been targeted in recent years by governments in the US and other Western nations over national security concerns. In November, US President Joe Biden signed legislation that stops companies judged to be security threats from receiving new telecom equipment licenses in the country. It means equipment from Huawei, ZTE, and three other Chinese companies are banned for use in USA telecoms. But my question is, if a lot of products are designed and manufactured in China, right, how does banning Huawei and ZTE, you know, affect them? Because if a lot of your manufacturers that you then allow still have to make the products in China, and what you fear is the Chinese government having influence on the technology that's being used in your nation. How do you know they're not influencing those other businesses when whatever is being produced? Because I don't know how they'll steal the data, but I'd imagine there are many ways of doing it. You know, 5G network, it's at the source, right? That's what you're afraid of. How do you know that these other firms, unless we are saying they're factories and whatever, these other manufacturers that are not Chinese, are they make them from their home countries, or if they're Canadian, they make them in Canada. So that'll be very interesting to see how we move forward, because this lack of trust between China and the West, when the West depends on China for manufacturing, it's fascinating to me, you know. And then moving on to another topic, Apple responds to an open letter about improving usage and reputation of Final Cut Pro in the filming industry. In April, a large group of Final Cut editors signed their name to an open letter asking Apple to do more to promote the use of Final Cut in the TV and film industry. In addition to closing feature requests today, Apple responded, "The creative community has always been so important to us at Apple, and the company pledged to address your important feature requests." Apple also said that it's adding new training products, expanding workshops, and setting up a consultation of panel of experts. You know, it's fascinating. When you look at a product like Final Cut Pro and a company like Apple, Apple has become so big that certain products they can forget about, you know, that don't contribute to their bottom line. And I think the challenge with software like Final Cut is you pay $300 to get it, and then that's it. It's a one-time payment, and you move on, and Apple doesn't really make more money from that purchase. So for them, it's not really a product that would interest them in terms of trying to make money from it, unless they have to change their business model to where it becomes more of a subscription-based, or they have to create a whole different SKU for it. Because if you look at Adobe, what Adobe has done with Creative Cloud, it's you are put in a situation where you have to pay, say, $20 every month, right? And that way, for them, Premiere Cut becomes a product that they have to keep invested in, because people are paying money and people want convenience for something that they're paying for, and they want value out of it. So at the end of the day, people, once they invest into Creative Cloud, Adobe then has to keep on updating it, and this is how they eat. Whereas with Apple, because they have a diverse portfolio of products, products like Final Cut become obsolete to them and mean less to them. But the good thing is when people start to speak up, because Final Cut is, you know, when you're using the Apple system ecosystem, it's more convenient than using, you know, Adobe Creative Cloud. So it would be interesting to see what Apple would do to make it a better software for creators, because most people who use Apple, especially when you're a YouTuber, you know, it's far, far easier to use Final Cut than to use Premiere, especially if you have no knowledge of editing. And you find that there's a lot of things that you can do in Premiere that you cannot do in Final Cut. But the simplicity of Final Cut is phenomenal. And if Apple could just make a little bit of changes, I think Final Cut would be very popular amongst YouTubers. And I'm pretty much sure you have over 50 million creators on YouTube, you know, and if they're all spending $300 and you come up with a different model in which you can make the product better, that can also be a revenue addition to Apple. I mean, they're not in any need for more revenue. The company makes $1 billion a day. So, you know, what do you tell companies like that? You know, it reminds me of that movie, Too Big to Fail. I think Apple is reached that stage now where they can look at revenues and be like, ah, man, why be bothered? But at the end of the day, you don't want to disappoint your people, you know. We are your fans, and we came to join for a reason, right? With that said, man, we've reached the end of Talking Business with Uncle Kevin. Let me know which other articles we should be checking out, which other business should we be looking out for. And yeah, I'll see you in the next one.